Welcome to an all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I'm Tyler. Subbing in for Matt today, a pair of great guests. We're going to kick things off with Sully, formerly of the Talking Out Loud podcast, to talk about this great start to the season for Dayton. And then the second half of the show, we'll talk about the resurgent and surprising Loyola Ramblers with Thomas Smythe of Podcast 63. Be sure to stick around for both of those. All right. I am joined by one of the few people on this great big blue marble to hold the title of retired podcaster. But I have gotten Sully back behind the mic to talk Dayton Flyers and A-10 basketball, the former host of Talking Out Loud and the man we all know on Twitter. Sully, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, man. Retirement insinuates finality. And I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but it's a break. I call myself a dormant podcast host right now. But radio appearances are still in my repertoire. And so I'm always happy to do it, man. I told people when I took a step back this year that I wasn't going to stop watching Dayton obsessively. I just had to stop talking about it obsessively online because I had other things and other priorities at this particular juncture of life. So, no, it's good to be back, man. It's awesome that we're here in January now, and we have relevant Flyers basketball to talk about. You know, from a Dayton perspective, I know this is a conference-wide podcast, but even for fans that aren't Dayton fans, it's cool for us to be back here 4 years later now, finally talking relevant basketball in January and February, which unfortunately not a lot of the other teams in the conference can say that, right?
Yeah, and I went back and looked. Your first appearance on this episode, Dayton had just beaten St. Louis in their first Arch Barron Cup battle of 2020 to move to 5-0 in conference. So
nice,
pretty close on the timeline here. Another really good Dayton team, and a bad Flyer squad could have given you a chance to just walk away from the season peacefully. But the way they're playing right now, we got plenty to talk about. And before we get into the real analytics of it, I think we should both just take a minute to kind of fan out here after his last two appearances. What have you enjoyed the most just watching Daron Holmes this season?
You know, I was at the game, Friday night when they played at Duquesne here in Pittsburgh. And you know, I think what's cool right now is just his ability to take the game over. Dayton doesn't really have to get in their bag and make a ton of adjustments night to night. And I even had people this afternoon that were barking at me because I was kind of saying that there's nothing overarching or excellent that Anthony Grant really has to do this year because he has Daron Holmes. And every night you basically have one of two choices, right? You can double him in the post and give up threes, or you can try and play him straight up, which hasn't worked out for anybody. But what that's turned into now is Daron can single-handedly change the tide of a game on any given night. And he's done it now in just about every conference game that he's played. You know, he had 29 against St. Louis. He had 33 against Duquesne. And then he started the year with two games, 18 apiece, Massachusetts and Davidson. So I think that's my favorite part is you can see Dayton be down a couple of points here or there, not playing their best game, which we've seen now. And then 5 minutes later, they're up six because Daron Holmes has a steal and three trips to the foul line or something. You know what I mean? It's just cool that he has that kind of ability to take over a game when the Flyers maybe not are playing their best ball.
Yeah, we really saw that. And we're recording this on Wednesday. So the Arch Barron Cup was last night. And it was kind of a back and forth slog for the first basically 28 minutes, and then it just became the Daron Holmes show. Grant was right, going to him possession after possession, and St. Louis could do nothing about it.
That's right, and that's why, I know people get on me about this, but I'm not going to sit here being oh my God, what a great job Grant is doing, because, again, it's not like I'm criticizing him. He just doesn't have to do a great job of anything. Just get the ball into 15, make sure your shooters have space. I mean, the offense that Grant has always, envisioned, it's already taking place, so there's not a whole lot of, adjustment that he's going to provide, and that's a credit to him for, designing a roster where he doesn't have to make all these like in-game tweaks. You're either going to play a game where, you know, Daron Holmes is going to give you 20 points in a night, or you're going to shoot like 30, 35 threes. And there's not really like a wrong answer. I mean, I thought last night that they should probably shoot a ton of threes because St. Louis was leaving them open. The one adjustment that they did make, which was really obvious, was switching off, you know, Santos and Brea to make entry passes instead of Bennett and Cheeks, because those guys were cold as ice. They couldn't hit a long ball. So it's, you know, it's really easy, right? It's a very basic adjustment. Get your best shooters to give Daron the ball into the post. And then that's going to create space if they decide to double him. And that's, you know, that's what happened. Daron got more one-on-one matchups closer to the rim. Brea got a couple of shots off in the second half, and hey, you know, Dayton comes out with a comfortable win because they're a better team with more talent just about every night now.
Yeah, and one of the things that I do want to shout out with Anthony Grant's coaching performance, we've now seen this twice, this year and in 2020, his two best offenses where he's made them a lot more simplistic and basically kind of just gotten out of the way and told the talent to go do the work.
Hey, and that's what we've been saying for years. I mean, not even to be highly critical, like we always said that the talent has to outweigh the system. And this year it does. Like, I have to give, you know, AG's credit for the roster construction, because I said this to multiple people, anybody that's willing to listen, he finally put together the roster that he's always like envisioned. And I use the example of the Obi Toppin year, right? Dayton was like in pace that year because Anthony Grant's always like a slow paced offense, right? If you go to the 2020 year, Dayton was 220th in pace that year. And you and I both know they scored 10 to 12 points a night on the fast break. So 10 to 12 points a night on the fast break, and they were still in the 200s in pace. So that tells you going into any season, the offense is going to be slow and methodical, and they're going to look for the open shot. Why that's all coming to fruition and working perfectly is they have the big man that attracts attention, just like Obi Toppin, right? And from last year to this year they're shooting 33%. This year they're shooting 40%. I mean, that's the difference in the season, right? They're getting to the line more. They're hitting more three-pointers. Teams are focusing on Holmes, and it's creating more space for everybody else. And in previous years, that wasn't enough because we didn't have the shooters to complement a big low. Like, you know, then we were guard heavy in the Crutcher years. And then like the last two Daron years, we haven't had enough good shooting to really make opponents respect the 3-point line. Well, now, you know, it's all kind of fallen into place. So credit where it's due that Grant finally got the guys to implement this system. And like you said, here's the way we want to play, and he gets out of the way. So, of course, credit where it's due. But, again, I'm not going to sit here and be like, coach of the year. Like, he's just kind of doing what is asked of him, which is, hey, that's all I'm asking for. Just win games. I don't have to have this, like, overarching Anthony Grant discussion every month. And it almost seems like people right now want to, like, come back around to have it. And, like, I don't care. 14-2. Everything's good. Why argue about it, you know?
I said at the beginning of the year, if this team makes the tournament, there's no discussion to be had.
No, it's fine. You know, like this is what we asked for, you know, I don't have my pitchfork out now that Dayton's sitting here at like the fifth seed in January. I mean, that's the expectation. That's where we're always supposed to be. So there's no more complaining to do. It's like, I hate that we had to go through three seasons to get here, but we're here. So who cares what happened the three seasons prior? I mean, look at the college basketball landscape right now. We're not even playing in 3-year windows anymore. We're playing like 1 or 2 years at a time. So, hey, this is the end of that 2-year window that maybe we were supposed to make the tournament. I think everybody thought we were going to be there Daron's first year, but let's just, you know, be as accommodating as we can. If this is a 2-year window and we make the tournament this year, try it again next year, because we're going to have a completely new roster next year, and we all know that too.
Well, it felt like a 2-year window last year, and they get the gift of Daron Holmes coming back for another season, and he is headed for an All-America honor here in 2 months. But besides him, Dayton is a top 25 team right now because of blank.
Besides him, 3-point shooting. I mean, you know, just look at it. It's so obviously the thing that's propelling Dayton right now. That's number one. And then number two is they're keeping opponents off the line. Like, they're playing physical defense, but they're not giving up free throws. And as we sit here today, there's only three teams that are giving up more free throws than Dayton. And those are the two big ones, right? I mean, Duran's getting to the line. He was always going to get to the line. He was always going to get his. You know, the offense was always going to be slow. Dayton was always going to play competent defense. They were going to share the ball. But I don't think anybody expected them to take and make this many threes point blank. And that's why this team's been successful. It's certainly been aided by the free throw component. But the three-point shooting is the reason Dayton's 14-2. That's it.
Yeah, and you mentioned the not giving up free throw attempts to the opponent. Matt couldn't join us for this episode, but I do have a stat from him that when Javon Bennett fouled out at the end of the Duquesne game on Friday, he was the first UD player to be disqualified the entire season.
Right. And I mean, he plays the hardest defense out of anybody, right? Like, he's flying around the point. He's always going in for steals. I mean, he plays more aggressive than I would say most. He's kind of he's even more aggressive than Kyle Davis a lot of times used to be for Dayton, right? Because he has to play the point. He can't sag off on shooting guards. But it's been fun to kind of see how this team's evolved. The one thing I will say on Dayton, if we're being specific on the team this year, is that like the season does still feel very fragile right now, right? God forbid, Duran's never really been injured for any amount of time, but even past him, Dayton's only playing like seven guys plus Zimmy. You know, Zimmy's like a half. He's like a seven and a half guy where some nights he's getting in, some nights he's not. As far as meaningful minutes go, I think he's played like 11 out of 16 games. But I think that's a concern right now, you know? I mean, think about all those years that Archie kind of like kept the glue together on those Dayton teams. And a couple of times they had some really bad injuries. There's obviously that one year where they only had seven guys on the roster. But that's the one thing that does concern me right now. I think Dayton has the talent to run through the conference. I think even if I'm being conservative, they're going to win 15 games. I think it's possible they could run the table, although I don't think that's probable because of what we've seen in the first four games here. You know, they have one injury and that 15-3, maybe that's worth two losses. I mean, you remember Kamara went down at the end of the year that cost us a game at LaSalle, you know, that was like a huge loss. And I don't think Dayton's ever going to be like that much on the brink to get a bid, but it's just something worth thinking about because seven and a half guys is not a lot. And that's pretty much what Anthony Grant has done here at Dayton. He cycled in eight guys a year.
Yeah. And I mean, just look at the Kobe Elvis injury against UMass. You had to hold your breath for the last 10 minutes of that game. And
right.
I mean, if UMass was just shooting slightly better, Dayton's 3-1 right now instead of 4-0.
Right. And I think going into the year, remember the kind of the story that, you know, you have to take it with a grain of salt. It's always dubious to believe like these preseason things that come out of camp, but the guys were like, we have a deep roster and we're going to play up tempo and we're going to shoot a lot of threes. Only one of those things has happened. They still are playing at the same tempo and they're not deep at all. And, you know, Petrus Podogiemis, he's not even dressing for games now. You know, I've been asking around. I don't know if it's grades or, you know, he's in the doghouse. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I used to get into the mud, you know, but I haven't gotten in the mud on a good rumor mill in a while. He's not playing. He's not dressing. And that's what I care about. And so, yeah, I mean, you're down to eight guys. If Dayton has any injuries from here on out, I couldn't even tell you that one of those seven guys is like easily replaceable because they all have a pretty significant portion of the production offensively.
Yeah, it's a roster that cannot afford a loss. But I want to flip it over to the defense, which basically played at a A-10 average rate in the non-con. Through four games, it's been the second best, according to KenPom, in conference play. Can that sustain?
I mean, probably, because I just don't – like, I hate to say it like this because you're an A-10-centric podcast, but, like, I don't have a whole lot of respect for the rest of the teams in the conference offensively. I just don't. And you look through – okay, so if you look through what, like, who's supposed to be the top four in the conference right now? Right. Let's go with Richmond, Mason, Bonaventure's 1-2. I mean, what do you do with them? So let's go to Richmond, right? Their offense is 139. Okay. Then you go down to like Rhode Island's 3-0. Their offense is 132. I mean, you can pick any one of these teams. George Washington, 150. So I guess the deck is just stacked. We're like, Dayton probably should see their offensive metrics come up in conference play because they're not seeing a ton of like great offenses. Like up and down the conference, the best offense that they're going to face isn't even a top 75 offense in general. So if they're an NCAA average defensive team, which is like 150, and they're not, they're in the 80s, then yeah, I mean, they probably should hold people 65 or under every night. I mean, is that crazy to think?
Not really, because they've stopped having the weird lapses that they had in, say, like the Northwestern game, where for right. 6 minutes they just looked atrocious and were right. just giving up threes at a high clip, and they cleaned that up in conference play.
Well, and I told the St. Louis guys, because they asked me on Tuesday, like, okay, we know St. Louis is bad. How do we win the game? And I say, it's pretty simple, or like we said earlier, the choice is simple. And I said, St. Louis's best bet is just to let Dayton fire away on three. And they did, and guess what? They were in the game for most of it because Dayton couldn't shoot. And that's how they're going to lose the game in conference, is they're going to have a bad three-point shooting night, someone's going to sneak up on them, and then they just won't hit shots down the stretch that they need to. But, you know, like last night, they put up 28 threes. They were 8 for 28. That was the story of the game. They make five of those. Games never close. So yeah, I look down the conference slate right now, and like something's gonna have to go wrong for Dayton to lose. Like it doesn't feel like they beat themselves. Does that make sense? You know, it kind of feels like Dayton's gonna have to beat themselves.
I mean, you look at the KenPom projections right now, and they tend to be pretty conservative for the best teams, and they have Dayton with a 5-game cushion over everyone not named Richmond right now.
Right. And then when you start to see things like they're favored in every game, even on the road, that just shows you there's kind of a lack of quality. Right. And I mean, me and you, we had front row seats for the last 10 years when, you know, in 2014, let's just go back, you know, 10 years, because it's easy. In 2014, when Dayton was playing to try to get into the NCAA tournament, and then they went on and made that run, they were 10-6 in conference play. But in the back half of their schedule, they played 4 games in the top 100 to end the season, right? 4 games. And that was just to end the season right in a row, 4 games in the top 100. Right now, Dayton has 5 games in the top 100 the entire rest of the season, all right? And they have 14 games to go. So, like, that just shows you how far the conference has gone in like the wrong direction. Because right now, the only top 100 games that Dayton has on the schedule is a home and home with VCU, Richmond, Bonaventure, and Joe's. Okay. In that same conference year I just mentioned 10 years ago, there was 12 games out of 16 that were in the top 100. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about the level of competition and where it's gone. Now, I know that's a little bit dramatic, but it isn't really. Like 10 years ago was not that long ago in the grand scheme of things. And it's crazy that we're sitting here on January 17th and Dayton doesn't have a single quad one game left. It stinks, you know?
Yeah. And that's been the rough part of what's been a better season overall in the A-10, but it's just given a ton of parity beneath the Flyers. But you're somebody who pays attention to the league as a whole, and we'll wrap it up here. Besides Dayton, it can be something on the court. It can be something in the Twitterverse. What have you enjoyed the most in the A-10 besides Dayton's performance?
Yeah, that is a tough question, because I do a little more complaining than applauding these days, you know, as I look up and down the standings. You know, it's good to see a lot of these programs take a step up, even if they're not taking the necessary step up. And I think this year I'm kind of talking about Duquesne and George Mason specifically. Like, they've taken a necessary step up where they're way more relevant than they used to be, but they're just not like above the take them serious line yet. As far as like contending for the conference, playing for NCAA tournament bids, like, you know, me and you talked about this, I think. Like, I was really not worried about the Dayton at Duquesne game at all. I couldn't believe it was an even line. I thought they were such a better team. But I guess it's a backhanded compliment. But I'm excited that there are programs that are taking a step upwards. I just wish that there was another step. And I'm fearful because, you know, in cases like George Mason, they might have had the right hire in Kim English, but boy, he just wasn't there long enough to really see it through. And that gives me a lot of concern, because I want there to be 5-6 year coaches like Thad Matta and Dan Hurley and Archie Miller, who come here and yeah, they use it as a stepping stone, but they use it as a stepping stone for 6 years instead of 2 years. So I don't know. I know the answer was, what am I excited about? I'll be a little more excited if we can get some of these other programs over the top and into the tournament consistently, because this year is just, it's a little concerning. It's frustrating. I don't know. It's a lot of things. It's annoying.
I was opening the door for you to say that you're enjoying the misery of the St. Louis fans.
No, but I said this on Twitter. Like, I don't even enjoy that, because SLU being good is good for us and it's good for the conference, right? Like, a big reason why the A-10 has taken such big steps backward as far as tournament bids is because of Dayton and St. Louis, right? Like, VCU's having a down year because they lost their coach. But no, I mean, I don't really step on their grave, because I would rather St. Louis be good. I would rather the Arch Baron Cup, you know, be a huge matchup. And, you know, last night it just wasn't. Like, you knew it wasn't. The fans knew it wasn't. The building was fired up, but just because there was a team on the floor playing, not because it was something relevant. And that stinks, man. You know, like, I just want there to be some fuss, you know, some hype around the ABC, and we're not going to get it this year. So my thoughts and prayers to St. Louis fans. You thought I was going to dump on them, but I'm not. I want them to be back up, you know, having big, big, meaningful games against us.
Sully, always with a more positive reputation than everyone believes. Where can everyone find you?
Oh, you know, it's at Sully, my good name. I've always been there. Long time. I feel like an old man in the podcast game now. But no, I'll be making the rounds on A10 Twitter and doing some podcast appearances. These ones are really easy, and I don't have to edit the shows or stay up late for them. So I appreciate guys like you that carry the torch and, you know, continue to put out good content, man. So it's always a pleasure. And I'm sure we'll do it again soon before March.
Yeah, appreciate having you on here. Everyone, be sure to go give him a follow.
Little audio issue there at the end. Sully did additionally remind everyone to wear red and be loud. But I wanted to do a quick little halftime here before we get to Thomas with a hot take. I've heard around some of the team-specific pods in the last week for some of the struggling programs. I know this was mentioned about Duquesne. I think someone might have said it about VCU last week before they rattled off those wins. I don't remember which show it was, though. The coaches should just focus on just trying to get everything right for March now, and the rest of the regular season doesn't matter, and the parity that there is this year really just kind of takes away the necessity to push hard for the double bye. I'm increasingly heading the other way, to the point that I think this might be the most important year ever to try to get a double bye, just simply because of how even everyone else looks right now. Let's ignore Dayton. Someone's going to have to knock them off in Brooklyn no matter what. Maybe it's your team. Maybe you get lucky and it's somebody else's. Richmond's looking like a strong number two at the moment, but that's not on the strongest ground in any way. You start looking down the standings, St. Bonaventure, VCU, they're 500. They absolutely could win the title. UMass and George Mason are under 500. They could win the title. St. Joe's, if they just get right at the right, if they just get hot at the right time, absolutely can win the title. I'm not sure Duquesne can anymore. But that doesn't even include all the teams that are actually playing well at the moment. Two, I think it's critical this season to just hold yourself to 3 games instead of 4. Because on any given night, it's becoming proven that anyone can beat anyone in this conference. You take a look at the KenPom projections right now. So let's just hypothetical the difference between 4 and 5 for, say, VCU. VCU's fighting to try to get that last double bye. You get it, you play three games. You don't, you get four. Normally that 5-12 game's kind of a joke. But under the current KenPom projections, you're getting the winner of a game between Fordham and Davidson. Now, history tells us that the McKillop family owns Fordham University, so you'd probably play them. Maybe it's the day that Skogman gets hot from three. Maybe it's the day that Reed Bailey is down there scrapping with VCU's not massively physically imposing centers. Certainly a game you could lose, but God forbid you have to play Fordham in that game. And their weird defense. Maybe it's the day where they're getting really physical with everybody all over the court. It's problematic. They did it to St. Bonaventure. And it could coincide with a day where they're hot from three on the other end. I would not want to take that chance with any team in this league right now. The clear pillow fighters are starting to emerge, but open up the standings page, look up and down. Is there one team that you truly feel sucks this season? Like, at this point last year, we knew Loyola was a disaster. We were pretty sure Rhode Island was a disaster. And we thought St. Joe's was too. It turned out that UMass took that spot from them after some guys got hurt. But unless a team like a St. Louis or a LaSalle now takes a bad injury on top of what's going on there, none of these teams are just a clear win on a given night. So, at this point, I'd be going all out for that double bye. And once we get to that point, I'm not sure there's going to be any difference in odds between the 2 seed, the 3 seed, and the 4 seed. 4 seed's a little bit more downgraded because there's a higher chance that they would run into Dayton. But you're probably going to have to beat them anyway if you really want that auto bid. And I'm not sure that any team is going to truly separate themselves as a true number two contender. The three most talented rosters, St. Bonaventure, who is just capable of a dud at any moment because of how shaky the scoring perimeter guys are on any given night. Although, quick shout out to Daryl Banks, who got moved to the bench and responded by playing the best game of his season so far. He looks rejuvenated. Maybe he becomes a huge six-man weapon for them now. VCU, let's not pretend like they're not still super talented. But that team's clunky. They're still having a lot of issues rotationally trying to figure out the offensive-defensive balance. And then St. Joe's, who just started 0-3. And I'm sure they'll rattle off 6 or 7 straight wins at some point. But they might do that. Get hot, get a 2 or a 3 seed, walk into Brooklyn, play whatever mediocre team you want to pick, and just get shellacked. That's what their season's been. So, to me, none of these teams are getting an at-large unless, like, maybe Richmond beats Dayton and then gives them a legitimate run for the title. I'm talking 15, 16 conference wins. Other than that, like, it would really require some sort of crazy, like, 12-game win streak from one of these other teams to even get into bubble consideration. So, for just about everyone, the goal should be clear now. Find a way to get to 2-3-4, get that double bye. It's not going to require as many wins as normal. Normally, you got to get to 12. Wednesday afternoon, when I was talking to Sully, the projection on KenPom would have required 10-8 just to get to third. Now, St. Bonaventure and Loyola both looked so good that night that they're both sitting at 11-7. But at this point, I would be outright shocked if it takes more than 11 wins to get to that 4 seed. So that's the number for everybody to shoot for. Richmond needs 7 more. Loyola needs 7 more. Other teams like St. Joe's still need 10. That double bye is going to matter a lot more than it does, and I think a lot of people would probably disagree with that. But there's my off-the-cuff rantings. Let's talk Loyola.
All right, now joined by Thomas Smythe of Podcast 63 to talk about Loyola and their 4-1 start to conference play. And Thomas, I want to throw a quick stat at you here. If the Ramblers can simply find a way to win one more game this season, they will have broken their all-time record for most wins in an A-10 conference season.
Yeah, as you can tell or not tell, I'm smiling at that because it's the truth that that's an improvement. Who would have thought that we would say this team is completely different to win one more game? But yeah, no, it's the truth. Our A-10 record wasn't great last year, and that's technically our career record, but always great to look to find at least one more game to add to the win column for conference play for sure.
Yeah, it took all the way till the last game of conference play against LaSalle to get to number 4 last season. This time it took a mere 5. And going into conference play, especially after that triple header of blowing the huge lead to UIC, then barely beating an awful, truly, truly awful New Orleans team, getting rocked by Creighton, and then looking like they straightened the ship, and then the terrible USF game. I don't think we expected this to be happening. So what's the biggest reason for Loyola starting to turn things around?
Yeah, I would say definitely a non-conference schedule that showed some highlights, but definitely I think was overshadowed by some definitely disappointments. But again, I would have to say it's the conference play definitely can change a mindset. And again, like most programs do, we kind of put some, maybe you could say, easy games to prep us before. We play in some programs like Western Michigan and then a D2. So it's a mix of that I think can prepare you. But ultimately, again, it's the guys stepping up. I think there's a different depth to the roster this year. Again, we're still finding our Achilles heels in some cases with turnovers. But I think we've straightened it out with the depth chart that have found some definitely brighter lights and highlights with the wins so far in 5 games.
Yeah, the brightest highlight, correct me if I'm wrong, but it has to be Jaden Dawson at this point, who was actually kind of a non-factor recording the day after the UMass victory. He got trapped into foul trouble for most of that game, but could you see this at all coming from him? Last year, he just looked like a guy who might give you some good defensive athleticism and not much more.
Yeah, I think there was always, again, when you think of a program like Loyola, right, we're not trying to limit ourselves to one and done seasons. Like, again, we want to contain success, right? And I think the biggest thing with Jaden Dawson was he was part of a recruitment that was focused on himself and a few other guys. So you kind of expected, okay, eventually this crew will find its way through, right? And this year he started off with injury, so there was even some questions, oh, he's going to get healthy. And then all of a sudden conference play, he's starting every conference game, and he's just getting comfortable. And again, he's just another level. Again, we even made an Instagram post. There's no sophomore slump here. There's a sophomore just soaring. And I think that's just true. I don't think there was necessarily like a complete takeover mentality I had that he would do. But I think now it's, again, that comfortability. You look at the St. Joe's game. We didn't make a single three until his three at the end of the game to go 1-8, I believe, in the second half. And that three kind of elevated us to get that win. So I think there was definitely a hope for it. But the fact that we're seeing it kind of this early and this quickly in conference play, I definitely think is a pleasant surprise for many fans.
Yeah, and one of the other big surprises, something that was really so shocking to me that I've actually screwed up his stats a few times on this podcast, but his wing partner, Des Watson, makes jump shots now. Something that was never happening at Davidson. He basically did everything that you would ever want your wing to do, except never make a three. And he's still an in-and-out shooter, but now he's around average for the season, if not a little bit better than that.
Yeah, I think I joked with other people, right? It's Jaden, it's Braden, and it's Dez, who from a shooting field goal percent of especially behind the arc, are feeling very comfortable. And I think we jokingly didn't expect maybe one person to particularly take a lead. All three, I think, are feeling comfortable with each other. Again, you might not see Braden necessarily with the points per game, like maybe Jaden's doing in conference play, or especially Dez. I think Dez is up there in conference play around 15 points a game right now. But again, all three of them are finding, again, I think nearly more than, at least I think Braden I saw the other day was like plus 50% from two. And then field goal overall, I think Braden's shooting 50% in conference play. So it's one of those that just, if you can find that balance and act between the three, you just benefit off each other. And that's what's really crucial.
And now we're starting to see Missouri Valley era Braden Norris as well, because he was a massive, massive disappointment last year. I don't think you can really understate it. And I think the improvement is so much due to Watson and Dawson and Miles Rubin and just actually having guys that help him out. He was getting bullied constantly last year. Teams knew that he was the engine for them. And now he actually has real threats around him.
Yeah, I think I think for overall, right, last year was Braden trying to do everything because he was expected to take a step up, right? You lose guys like Lucas Williamson. You lose guys like Ahir Ubak from the previous year. So last year was kind of an all or nothing. And it was tough because I do think the transfers that we got in didn't really highlight the benefit of having key depth for players around guys like Braden. And then this year you see the complete opposite, a complete 180. You see guys that can feed off each other, guys that want to look to score, want to look to pick up defensively. So I do think, taking aside the previous years, again, this year is a whole complete package for Braden to work with so many guys, right? He's up in every category, I believe, except for technically points per game. But again, for a point guard, you love to see other categories go up because, again, that whole general aspect, the team leader, well-rounded across the board in the box scores for sure.
Yeah, and the most important thing is that he's passing the ball with a great rhythm again this year, sitting at ninth in the A-10, that's an assist to turnover. I was going to say that's way too low. He actually retook the conference lead from Grant Huffman in assists per game after six in last night's against UMass.
Yeah, and that's the thing that one you could say was last year plagued by turnovers. I know, again, you couldn't mention the word turnover without also mentioning Loyola last year across all of maybe college basketball. But this year, I think having those key leaders with you, those wing guys, guys even you mentioned earlier, Miles Rubin, that are looking to score as well. Assists are just key. We've said it ourselves at Podcast 63, an assist to turnover ratio should always be big separation, but that just can change the rhythm of the game, like you said, right? I think when Braden is able to feed guys and then he feeds off other guys, whether he goes find an open shot, I think it's really crucial. And again, just highlights what he can do as a point guard, right? It's pretty crazy to think in 1 year, what a difference. But I think when you find the right pieces, you can get guys who are looking to help with assists.
Yeah, and let's not overlook the fact the turnover numbers are still pretty awful. They're just not one of the 15 worst teams in the nation awful anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. You can say we're improving, but again, you never want your turnovers to be as high as how many times have we had double digits, right? But again, that team last year was plagued so much by it, which I think dug themselves a hole so big that was hard to fight and find their way out. And you look at games like the St. Joe's game, you look at games like what were yesterday with UMass, when then you lost the lead or you gave it up, the turnovers just added more. And now I think, again, you look at the team, yes, they're turning over the ball still at a high clip, but they're finding ways to win and not letting it kind of be the kryptonite that's keeping them down from finding that way to win.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that UMass game in a second, because I feel like that is something that could have significance come March and when we're trying to figure out the narrow margins of seeding. But I want to move into that talking about Philip Alston. And I had a random thought yesterday in the afternoon about how it really just didn't seem like, despite having a much better team around him, he's not taking the step up this year that many people expected to become an all-conference player. And his stats were pretty comparable. He was really a disappointment for a little bit there, coming back from the injury. Took him a while to get going. And then he goes out, has 23 points, 6 rebounds against UMass, including the game-winning putback and one where UMass just decided they were going to give him 3 chances at the rim there. And this felt like a turnaround moment. Like the moment that if Philip Alston makes an all-conference team, we're going to look back on last night as what sparked the beginning of that.
Yeah, I think, again, if you think about it, right, we're a third of the way through conference, or no, we're just under still. But again, I do think the depth to scoring has added. And again, right, I think Phil would rather win conference regular season and win maybe the conference tournament rather than personal accolades. But I think he showed last night for sure the fight he can have. And again, a game like that can turn around mentality and turn put on a run. Right. And I definitely think Phil can do that. Again, you look at the Richmond game, 0 points, only 14 minutes played, maybe plagued by fouls. And last night, as many know, the UMass game had plenty of fouls to give out, and he still found a way though to put up 23 points. And again, not be afraid to make free throws, even though you might miss one previous 10 seconds before, able to put it in the back of the net to take the lead. So I do think this is the type of game, again, what, shooting over 50% from field goal, I believe, last night, that when you see yourself putting up those numbers, you easily can get that mentality. And again, hey, we got 10 plus games left in conference play. I do agree with you that you could see maybe a turnaround for sure.
So this game last night, you beat UMass by 1 thanks to the Alston play. UMass without Matt Cross, which is just not quite the same team. They go from probably a double by contender to somewhere around like the 8-9-10 range in the conference. But you just look at all of the factors. I've talked about on here, UMass is going to have a half dozen games where either Jalen Curry or Robert Davis goes off. It happened in this game. Curry has 18, 4 of 7 from deep. They're really hard to beat when that happens, especially when Josh Cohen goes out, puts up 28 points, gets to the foul line 16 times, and puts basically every person who could even masquerade as a big man on your team in foul trouble. Loyola shoots 6 of 21 from 3. You put all those factors in there together, and a bad team just loses that game.
Yeah, I think, again, just calling out the UMass, right? Cross is definitely a player. Again, it's one of those times that when you're looking at the pregame or you're kind of scouting it, you're like, okay, these guys are double trouble, right? And it's just going to be one of those things that, oh, you have to prepare. And then, oh, wait, there's one of them missing. Oh, we only have to worry about one guy. Well, this one guy last night put some guys in blunders and had no confidence of just going straight to the rim. And again, hats off. I think ultimately it's something to look for. I think especially Loyola, right, when you're going up against guys against like Venning or any big guy, Holmes, of course, that's going to be an interesting one. But I think Cohen kind of highlighted some things that need to be definitely talked about. But I think the idea that we're not letting one player overwhelm. And again, hey, I think Miles Rubin did pretty well for a freshman going up against a guy who's seen many seasons in the NCAA. But I think Miles is definitely a benefit to learn from those things, right? Again, Josh is averaging 18 a game and he put up nearly close to 30. So I think there's some things there. I think, like you said, though, a team that might have just let the turnovers overwhelm them or the bad shooting overwhelm them doesn't win that game. They don't look to find to win. And again, look at Loyola. We were down missing free throws that could have clinched a tie. And even with Cohen missing that free throw at the end there, right, still found a way to fight and keep putting the bucket up. And I don't know how many times we can get offensive rebound, but still putting a ball up helps tremendously.
Yeah, and this was a game that felt like going down the stretch was just going to be decided by free throw shooting. That turned out to not be the difference. Both teams took 31. UMass hit 22, Loyola hit 21. So a +2 performance in non-free throw shots for Loyola. Anything else you take out of this performance looking ahead?
really, when you look at this performance from at least Loyola's perspective, I think the biggest thing is when guys are in foul trouble, who to rely on, right? The depth, the questions of, I think Dame has come off really hot in conference play. Last night with foul trouble, maybe ran into some issues. Same with Jaden, right? Coming off hot, but last night you run into a foul trouble. Well, who can help facilitate what's going on? And maybe who can next guy up mentality? I do think UMass is, again, without Cross, going to have some issues potentially fighting for a double bye. Because, again, you can't put it all on one guy. But last night, one guy in particular nearly won it all for them. So, again, it's going to be, I think, an interesting path. I think with Loyola getting a tough win like last night and finally getting over the barrier of St. Joe's for the fourth time, finally seeing that win, I think you'll expect a little bit more from now the Ramblers going into the rest of the conference play for sure.
Yeah, and one just last thought on that game, because it was maybe the most remarkable thing that happened. Miles Rubin picks up his first foul about a minute into the game, immediately gets a quick hook from Drew Valentine, then had to come back in pretty soon after because Adelakun picked up two fouls himself. But Miles Rubin, amidst the Josh Cohen just running over everyone train, did not commit a foul the rest of the game.
Yeah, I think honestly, it's so interesting to look at a freshman like that and be like, oh, he's so selective. But he is, right? Three blocks. And I think the idea that he doesn't foul the rest of the game is pretty crazy. Because again, you want to be aggressive. You want to really push up against a guy that's really going to be some hard times down in the paint. And again, Josh had no problem putting people in spin moves, putting going to the basket, a little pivot here and there. But I think, again, that control, right? I think Miles has definitely a lot to learn, but he also showing that he has already such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to defending and being selective when to go up for the shot, when to go for the shot block. So I think kudos to him. Again, I think some freshmen in this country for NCAA freshmen who are centers would maybe back down or maybe make that easy, silly mistake just to foul hard. And again, I think Miles played a lot with his head up and a high basketball IQ to make sure he didn't cause himself any foul trouble. And again, if everyone's in foul trouble, no one's going to be able to defend. You might have Braden Norris ended up defending Cohen at one point if we ran into that trouble.
In the amazing transition block he had, where he like side swiped the ball, basically, you can actually see him calculating as he's taking stride. So it's would have been so easy for him to come up, just make the swatting chase down block into the third row of the stands that would have just gotten that crowd nuts. He turns his hand. You can see it as he's in air. He turns his hand to smack the ball off of the court and keep it in play. And that's just something that a freshman just doesn't do.
No, and again, it's crazy because, again, Loyola Chicago, based in one of the greatest cities for high school basketball talent. So to think that Miles had played at such a high level already, and then for Loyola to get a player like that, I think there is such a benefit. And again, right, you said it perfectly, right? He was thoughtful. He was thinking of the process. Some guys go up there and just hack, just whack away, all get it, and then you might end up with a foul. And again, those momentum swings are crucial because it's like, oh, not only do you stop, oh, you can momentum to the basket on the other end, right? And that was crucial last night. You saw that as flashy as sometimes Dez can be with the alley-oops or even Greg Dolan with his behind-the-back pass. Defense leads into offense, and the transition is really crucial. And having guys like Miles be so tactical when it comes to defense, I think is just a massive benefit to have, especially in the A-10 where big guys aren't few and there's the guys who will make their presence known like last night.
So looking forward, before we wrap this thing up, who's the most important player on this team? Because I think you can make a lot of arguments to that question.
Yeah, for me, it's so interesting because, again, as nostalgic as I could be, we could say why the Final Four influences this thought. But for me, it's going to be guys off the bench. I think Dame is just going to be so beneficial. Because of situations where we might need him to get minutes or get buckets, right? He's so tactile himself on offense. He will start dribbling, bring you down into the paint, and then he'll try to maybe give you a little shimmy, give you a little something, and shake you off the block and hit to the backboard. And I think guys like Dame, who are going to be crucial down the stretch when the games are long, like last night, right? You're playing a very long game. It's like, hey, we got 10 plus more games like this and hopefully conference play. So I think Dame adds a depth to the roster that is so crucial that some teams, if you just don't have it after your five, where do you find that scoring? Where do you find that kind of tenacity and that strength to lift the team up when maybe you need a quick bucket, right? Rotations are critical in the A-10, mismatches. And I think guys like Dame can really set a standard for what it would be for crucial minutes off the bench.
And this is going to be an interesting team from an awards perspective at the end of the year, where Adelakun in a normal year probably ends up being a sixth man of the year candidate. And I talked about this with a player on another team. I can't remember who in the last episode, but as long as Dayton runs away with this conference and Kobe Brea continues to be top five in the nation in 3-point shooting, it will be his award. But Loyola could be a team that potentially finishes fourth or fifth and maybe even gets shut out from an awards perspective because Alston's going to put up the best numbers. But it feels like Dawson's the one who's changed kind of the way that they're playing, while Braden Norris is completely indispensable.
Yeah, it's and again, frankly, Loyola has seen that before, right? The Valley was traditionally known for it. The best team just wins the awards. And I go back to maybe a Player of the Year award that we should have taken home. But I think, again, the individual awards could be given out for so many things, right? I think field goal percentage, Dame is, I think, even top three. Right. We just talked about Braden being number one, or at least taking it over Grant for assists per games. So as a team perspective and individuals, Loyola players and Rambler players are just finding ways to take ownership. And I think that's going to be just tough. And you're absolutely right. Right. The teams like Dayton, when they just have a runway and they can just run with it, that's just what happens. And again, they're not playing bad basketball. They're just playing dominating basketball. So again, I think we could easily make a fight for it. I'm loving hearing the idea of top four. Wouldn't mind getting a double bye, not having to see anyone on Tuesday. But again, ultimately, I just love the individual kind of ownership of Dame, of Braden, and Jaden that are then helping the team win, right? They're all finding ways to just win and find ways to win. And again, we're hopefully going to see that now after the last two games for sure.
All right, we'll wrap this up with two questions here. We'll start on the negative. So if I tell you right now, this is a mirage. This 4-1 is fake. This team is headed either back to the pillow fight or a disappointing loss in the 8-9 game in front of a bunch of school kids and like 20 adult fans. What happened? Where does this team start to turn shaky again?
I would say don't get caught looking, right? Don't get caught watching the paint dry. Right. Take the momentum because I easily can see. Right. Like you look at it, you didn't let the Richmond game tear you down going into St. Joe's. You only lost by two to Richmond. Looked like a back in the day defensively minded, small, slow scoring game. But yeah, I think you have to be tactical with the games you have left on your schedule. Again, I don't think George Mason is something to like think they're easy. Right. I think you have to be smart. And again, right. Like, we got St. Louis coming back home. That's our next home game. That first half was amazing against St. Louis. And then all of a sudden, wait, the St. Louis was coming back. So again, I think you have to be taking each one by step. But if we end up playing on Tuesday with four different public schools bringing their audience in there for some fans, I think there's definitely some questions that need to be talked about at the end of the season for sure.
All right, well, let's close it out by flipping that then. So let's say that they do get to a double bye. And I talked briefly right before this about the importance of that. And I think we're headed towards a spot where the 2-3-4 seeds, the difference might mean nothing. And those teams are going to basically have even odds to go win that tournament. And if someone can knock off Dayton, it's going to just be wide open for someone to go grab that automatic bid. So for Loyola to get there, what's the most important thing that has to happen?
Yeah, I think it's going to be potentially, right, who has the head-to-head, who has the better record, maybe one game. I think you're absolutely right, could dictate maybe your third to sixth. For Loyola to go grab those spots, I think it's what it's going to come down to really is just offensive efficiency. I think defensively that we can be sound, we can go there, but being efficient and don't let runs take you over, right? Yeah, 10-0 is great, but then you can't go 0-5 from field goal and let the other team just catch up. I think being tactile with each possession, and even I would love to see one note is maybe slow it down. I'm classy. I like the nostalgia of slowing it down, taking up time. That used to be what our motto was 5 years ago. But again, we got to find ways to win. And like we said in the beginning of this, if we can find more one way, one more game to win, we've improved already. But I think the way we've started has dictated that we should look for more than just one more win.
All right, Thomas. Well, Loyola is playing well enough that for the first time since they took the court with the A-10 patch on their jerseys, we dedicated a whole segment to the Ramblers. We haven't talked this long about them since Braden Norris came on in the summer of 2022. But they're contenders now, and everyone's going to be looking for the best places to hear about and read about Loyola. Where can everyone find you and your great podcast partner, Andrew Buckles?
Yeah, Andrew and I, of course, Podcast 63. And when he's not coaching, we'll be pushing out episodes. Also, of course, anytime we write for A-10 Talk, great A-10 coverage overall. But of course, then just both our podcasts on any of your podcast networks. And of course, on X/Twitter, we are very active with the rest of the Rambler community. But always a pleasure to get our own segment and finally show some highlights of what Ramblers basketball can do.
Yeah, Thomas, thank you for joining me. A dedicated fan who many people don't realize, maybe the only person to show up for the first 3 days of the A-10 tournament, but then not see the semifinals and the final last year.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
All right, that does it for this episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. Another thanks to both Sully and Thomas for coming on, talking Dayton and Loyola. If you didn't already, be sure to go back. This is actually a 2-episode week for us. Matt and I grabbed the mics earlier in the week to talk about our buys and sells of the conference season so far. So be sure to go back and listen to that. If you enjoyed it, please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. You can reach out to us on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod. And just keep an eye out. We'll have at least one episode coming for you every week here the rest of the season. And as things start to get really chaotic, we might be slipping in a second here and there. So keep an eye out for that.